TV.
Man, I'm having a rough time here. My stupid little tripod I've been using for 3 years is broken. My microphone barely stays in my phone in the slot. So I'm gonna hold the phone here. I don't wanna be at my desk today. I wanna be in the car. I wanna talk about 1 Corinthians again. So I'm gonna hold this thing. And not the ideal circumstance. I'm not in a great mood, but yeah, the world has gone absolutely mad. It's a crazy house, crazy place. So our refuge is in Christ. You know, I wish I could follow my own advice and not listen to any of the news, but you're still in the world. So anyway, enough of that. If you have a soulish body, that is a body that's run by your soul. And if you have a soilish body, that is a body that's made of the soil, then I have good news for you. You're perfectly set up, believe it or not. You're perfectly set up for the change that's coming, because the requirement is to have a soulish, that is a body that's ruled by the soul, and a soilish body. One is, you might say, a disposition, one's a composition. The disposition is the emotions, the soul. The composition is the soil. And it all has to do with this, the first part of this. First part of this transaction between us and God. That is, He puts us through this hard stuff, the bad things first, in order to set us up for the good things. So I'm going back to 1 Corinthians. I started a couple weeks ago a series in 1 Corinthians. I'm in chapter 15. I left off with our bodies being sown in infirmity, roused in power. All these contrasts, just to review. Our body is sown in corruption, roused in incorruption. Sown in dishonor, roused in glory. Sown in infirmity, roused in power. Sown in a soulish body, roused a spiritual body. The reason Paul's using the sown there, S-O-W-N, is because he's relating it to a seed planted in the dirt. What is dirt? Well, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, we're made of it. So the analogy is that as a seed goes into the dark dirt, thus our God's spirit has been poured into us, and this body is dark dirt, and yet the light of Christ and the water of the evangel will bring life out of these dead bodies, and it's all because of these dying bodies. It's all because of Christ's sacrifice on the cross. So let's go on. That's where I left off. It is sown a soulish body. It is roused a spiritual body. The King James makes a very unfortunate translation in this area of Scripture. It substitutes the word natural for soulish. Two different Greek words, of course, but they don't care. They take the one Greek word, psychikon, which is soulish. They'll make it soulish somewhere, and other places they'll make it natural. But I'll have you know, a spiritual body is a natural body. There's nothing wrong with the natural. But the soulish is what you see in the Pentecostal religion. It's on a totally emotion-based reality of life. It's an emotional way of looking at things. And we're ruled by that. The source of the soulish nature is the five senses. These are how we input life. You don't receive things of the spirit by your five senses, by the way. When I used to smell the incense at the Catholic Church, I thought that was God. I thought I smelled, whenever I went into the confessional, I smelled this holy odor. I thought it was God. It was the priest's aftershave. I think it was Old Spice. So totally deceptive to rely on the five senses. This is what is soulish. It is sown a soulish body. A soulish body responds to the five senses. And again, the soul is just your consciousness. The soul is what you're aware of. You don't have a soul. You are a soul. The Spirit of God came unto Adam. God breathed his life into him, and he became a living soul. Became a living soul. That is, he became a sentient being, became aware of his environment. And the only way he could input from his environment was with the five senses God gave him: touch, smell, hearing, whatever the other ones are. You've heard a saying, don't believe your eyes? Well, there you go. everything we see and feel, for the most part, is soulish. And that's the word used here. It's an unusual word. People aren't used to it. They're used to the word soul, but most Christians think that the soul is the spirit. They confuse the soul and the spirit constantly. They think that the soul is the thing that God saves. Well, Christ does speak of saving the soul, but what he means by that is that he is going to give you good feelings in the resurrection. Your soul, you're still going to have a soul, but it's going to be spirit-infused. It's going to be spirit-informed. You're still going to have sensations in the next life. But they will be spirit-ruled. But for now, I want to concentrate on how Paul differentiates the soulish body. You see, there's the difference. We're still going to have soul in that we're going to respond to input, but the body won't be ruled by it. It'll be ruled by the spirit. Now it's ruled by the soul, and we get a little bit of input by the spirit. Then it will be 100% input by the spirit, but it won't be without sensations, obviously. To say that a spirit body has no sensations, which is the common thinking, just doesn't make sense, because how will heaven feel good? How will it feel good to see Jesus? How will we be thrilled? How will we have joy? We're going to see things in the celestial realm. We're going to hear. Don't we hear the voice of the chief messenger when he comes for us? Don't we hear it? So the soul, the senses, is involved. But it's ruled by the Spirit at that time. So let me see if I make this clear to you now. Today we have a soulish body with a touch of the Spirit. Then we will have a spiritual body with a touch of the soul. And again, Christianity, mainly the Pentecostal church, they confuse this all the time. They think that sensations are spirit. But the spiritual realm is not perceived by the soul. The spirit realm cannot be seen. I've never seen it. It can't be heard. I've never heard it. It can't be felt. I've never touched it. It can't be smelled. I've never smelled it. Did I cover them all? I don't even know. All I know is it is frustrating sometimes to have a walk of faith where the most important things, the biggest things you know, I mean, right in front of my face is a nose, and I got these two eyes on either side of it, and I got a mouth in the middle, taste. You can't taste the kingdom. You can't taste it. You can't taste spirituality. I got all these things up here, these eyes, the nose, and the mouth. What do I get out of it? What do I get out of it? Do I get any spiritual revelation out of it? No. I got these fingers. I got five here. I got five on the other hand. I can't show you now because I got to hold my camera and I got to hold it still or my microphone will fall out. Do these help me any? No, no. They don't help me a bit in the realm of the spirit. Nothing, nothing. So that begs an interesting question. How do I receive things of the spirit? All these wonderful things God gave me, these senses, they don't work for that. It can make a person upset. So, I don't know. I really don't know how the Spirit of God illuminates us. It's almost like magic. It's almost like magic because it bypasses these five senses, totally bypasses them, totally. Which is not to say we don't have reactions from the Spirit, but anytime you have a praise for God on your lips, or if you feel a flutter in your heart or whatever, these are all reactions to the Spirit. Don't ever mistake these things as a spirit. That's what the Pentecostals do. They get their heartbeats and they think, oh, that's the Spirit of God being manifest. No, it's not. No, it's not. They feel a tingly sensation going up their legs, through their crotches, into their brains. They think that's a spiritual sensation. No, it's not. It's a soulish sensation because they have a soulish body and they're ruled by the soul. I can sit here in my car, have a spiritual revelation, and I can't taste it, touch it, smell it, and all the rest. I can't remember them all at the same time. And yet you get it. And I don't even know how we process the Spirit. it still involves our minds. But this is interesting. The brain is not considered a sense, is it? No, your eyes, your nose, your ears, your mouth, and your touch. But the brain, the mind, the thinking, it's not considered part of your soul. What it does is it processes the incoming stimuli that your senses pick up, but it processes it. Now, that mind that God gave us, Paul says in Romans 12:3, it is to be renewed. Paul speaks of the renewing of your minds, not the removal of it. I always point that out. And so it's the mind, the thinking, that can process spiritual input. That's the little key I was missing. It's the mind. The mind becomes the mind of Christ. It's the same thinking. It might still have to do with the brain. I think we might still have a brain in the resurrection. We have to process these stimuli somehow. So it is sown a soulish body, it is roused a spiritual body. Here's verse 45. If there is a soulish body, there is a spiritual also. This comforts you and comforts me concerning ourselves, concerning everything that has a soul. And I could go into Genesis. Don't want to do it tonight. I'm not up for it. That's for sure. But one characteristic of a soul, I mentioned this in the show with Seth the other night, is that it moves of its own. That's one characteristic of a soul. And I'm going to stick with that right now. Anything that moves of its own has a soul. Animals have a soul. Fish have a soul. Birds have a soul. Humans have a soul. Paul mentions these categories in verse 39. Not all flesh is the same flesh, but there is one indeed of humans, yet another flesh of beasts, yet another flesh of flyers, another flesh of fish. So you have animals, fish, birds, and humans. If there is a soulish body, there is a spiritual body also. So I can look at a dog, I can look at Honda or Charles, say there's a soulish body. So there is a corresponding spiritual body for that being. That being has a corresponding spiritual body. It goes with humanity. That's why I say every single human being is blessed, even though they're now a soulish body. If there's a soulish body, there's a spiritual also. Verse 45 of 1 Corinthians 15. Very important verse. It tells me that every single soul has a corresponding spiritual body. In other words, its present body will be traded in, whether it's a lizard or a bird or a whale or a parrot. It has a corresponding spiritual body that it will inhabit. Whatever spirit, whatever being that thing is, it is now living in a soulish body, including yourself, but it will become a spiritual body. But that same being, however you define that, the person, the animal, the fish, that each fish is different, just as each person is different. A fish have personality. I mean, each one is different because it's a different one. That's profound, I think. Each one is different because it's a different one. And so it will be recognized as that fish instead of that fish. And there's tons of fish, but God keeps track of them, you see. So each fish has a corresponding spiritual body. And that fish will be known for being that fish. Or you have maybe three parakeets, and they each have a name. One's named Harvey, one's Jane, and one's Michelangelo. And they're all different. Your cats are different. Your dogs are different. So we don't often think of this, but all the fish in the sea are different. But they all have this in common, and that is they have a soulish body. If there's a soulish body, there's a spiritual body. And I would add this. This is Martin Zender's word added to the scripture. I'm being very bold here. If there's a soulish body, there is a corresponding spiritual body also. I added the word corresponding. It corresponds to it in that it's not the same body, but it's the same thing. It's the same person. It's the same animal. That's your animal. That's Charles in the resurrection. There's your dog, Spot. That's Spot in the resurrection. That's Spot. You will look at Spot. That's Spot. There will be billions of other dogs, but there's Spot, and you will know it because that animal had a soulish body, and it is a corresponding spiritual body. That being is just wrapped in another vessel. And this vessel is ruled by spirit, not by soul, not by the intake of the five senses. The common thing is the mind. The mind will process both the soulish and the spiritual. So that thing, that mind, that carries on. So all your memories, all your experiences that you have in your mind, somehow it's going to be preserved, and you're going to be carrying it, though, in a new body that is ruled completely by the spirit. But you'll be able to enjoy it. So, verse 45, if there's a soulish body, there's a spiritual also. Thus it is written also, the first human, Adam, became a living soul. The last Adam, a vivifying spirit. Yeah, the first Adam became a living soul. This was the design. And we're going to see this. I'll get into this tomorrow. This is the divine order of things. Paul is very, very careful. In fact, he's overly pointing out, again and again, he points out that what's first and what's second. What comes first is the soul, the soulish body. What comes next is the spiritual body. It has to be that way. You can be thankful it's that way. So I'll get into the order of things tomorrow, because my hand is cramping up from holding this phone. I'm going to have to end this show soon. So now Paul's talking about specifically humanity, whereas up in verse 38 and 39 and 40, he was talking about every soul that wanders the earth or flies in the heavens or swims in the sea or crawls on the bottom of the ocean, on the ocean floor. Isn't it amazing how God's going to take all these souls and vivify them, make them alive beyond the reach of death? They were created to enjoy God. So if you ever had a pet that was kind of a pain, that pet will be changed. Hitler was kind of a pain, back to human beings now, but he will be changed. So there are some animals that are pains. What do we have to do with raccoons and opossums? They're kind of nuisances. So just as they're irritating humans, they're irritating animals, irritating birds, they're irritating fish. I've been irritated by many fish over the years, and I'm glad to know that they're going to be changed and they're going to inhabit a better body. So that's all good news. It's good news for you. It's good news for your pets. It's good news for Flipper. It's good news for Mr. Ed. It's good news for Gentle Ben, although Gentle Ben won't need to be changed much because he was already gentle when he was on Earth. It's good news for Lassie. Good news for Trigger. It's good news for Eeyore, for Tigger, for Winnie the Pooh. It's good news for Mickey Mouse. God has not left anything out. He's a benevolent God. He's a good God. He's full of life. He's full of spirit. But it's all a timing thing. It's all a timing thing. And as we're going to see tomorrow, as we have worn the image of the soilish, so will we wear the image of the celestial and the spiritual. It's a guarantee. If you're in a fleshly body, if you're in a soulish body, that is a guarantee that you will have a spiritual body. I'll leave you with that because that's good. If you are in a soulish body, if you are in a body made of soil, if you are part of this soulish creation, you might think you've been cursed, you've been dealt a bad hand. No, that's a guarantee that you have a corresponding spiritual body. And in this context, we're talking about immortality. So basically, we're talking about immortal spiritual bodies. And it's going to be a hell of a trade. And talk about trading in your old junker for a new car. This is like trading in your junker for a spaceship.